I think we're on air. I'll have my backroom producer tell us if we're on air. Yeah, we'll go. Oh, I was ahead of the curve then. I've muted the other one on the main channel. I normally get like a double feedback. Right. So anyway, I'm here with Orwell. All are well and good. He's wrote a book. How are you doing there, fella? You all right? Tell me about your book.
Yeah, I'm not bad, Morgan. Thanks for having me, mate. Yeah, so just to get to the chase, the book's about time preference, which is traditionally an economic theory, but I apply it to diagnose a lot of social problems that the West is facing at the moment, ranging from the death of the family, death of the nation, death of God, sort of a loss of discipline, fat acceptance, hyper-capitalism, consumerism, and all these sort of socially undesirable things that we have in place, all these incentive structures which promote present-mindedness over having a family. And as a result, you see stuff like birth rates falling through the floor, mass immigration into your deindustrialized neighborhoods, and just a whole Pandora's box of disastrous things to happen to the West in general.
And it's if you've pinned it down because it's a sort of throwaway consumer culture, and nothing really is built. I mean, not just crap tellies and iPhones, but family units and relationships as well. That's kind of the impression I've got.
Yes, that's right. Because traditionally, a lot of sort of libertarians talk about time preference, like ANCAPs in particular. And I do come from that background, but I moved on in the last few years. And I've taken the whole idea of time preferences out of the materialist economic realm and have applied it to more of a metaphysical, philosophical realm and used it to diagnose a lot of problems associated with hyper-capitalism. The use of short-term loans, as we saw after the 2008 crisis, payday loans, credit cards, and then you have all these other sort of factors adding into the mix, such as like, you've seen like these fat acceptance movements, which sort of take away any consequences of your actions, so you could just stuff your face with all these fried foods and just wash it all down with drinks, sort of full of high fructose corn syrup, and there's no consequences for it. So a lot of the consequences of these actions have been completely removed from the equation. So people don't really get to suffer the things that they do for themselves. And it's just such a sorry state of affairs to see for a lot of people. It's mostly in these big cities where you see a lot of this hyper-consumerism, this I know this word's overused, but degeneracy. But also other places around in the UK, for example, you see this sort of subculture on the weekends, heavily tattooed boys with who take a lot of steroids, and these very sort of women of easy virtue who give it up for anybody, shall we say, drinking too many Blue Wickeds, and the boys having one too many pints of Carling and misbehaving. And I think that's just a symptom of a wider societal problem. In particular, in your neck of the woods up in the north, there's a lot of deindustrialization, which has happened thanks to a lot of economics since the 60s, pretty much, and been worsening ever since. And then there's nothing to replace the deindustrialization apart from sort of hyper-consumerism or this technology that people seem to have replaced sort of something greater than themselves with just these fleeting dopamine hits, and pretty much that's it.
I mean, I think it would have survived for a while in the north without the deindustrialization if we still had sort of the church, but that went as well. The sort of the cultural Marxism took that, and Thatcher gutted the place of the industrial economy, and then cultural Marxism came along and took what was left of the moral stuff, so you're left with nothing. It's funny because I walked into a chip shop a few months back, and there's a little old woman there. She was like about 60-year-old, and we got into a conversation as she was preparing me fish and chips, and I'd been doing 12-hour shifts, and she was saying, and I was complaining about it, and then she said, "Well, if you weren't working, you'd just be bored." And I thought that mentality, it back in the day it would be admirable, but now it's not, because there's not really any community to sort of benefit from it all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's reflective in the sort of the collapse in the birth rates, especially in city areas. I was up in the Northeast 3 years ago for my cousin's wedding. Well, I was in Durham at the time, and it just looked completely transformed. It's a very beautiful city with architecture dating back 800-900 years. But there's just a lot of these, as Boris Johnson says, letterbox ladies, lots of these burqa-clad women walking around the place. And I think a lot of people are aware of this rapid change in their sort of understanding of the world, the demographics around them, and the fact that there is no sort of perceived job stability. I heard an alarming statistic about Middlesbrough, because I have a lot of love for the Northeast. A lot of my fondest childhood memories are up in the Northeast. I used to spend a lot of time with my dad up there. I spent most weekends up there growing up. And I heard that in Middlesbrough has got the highest concentration in a square mile radius of per square mile of off licenses, betting shops, and tanning salons. Now, I think those three things are pretty representative of this cultural demise and this sort of, I don't know how to put it quite. I mean, I know that a lot of the industries have left the Northeast, especially that part. But the fact of the matter is that they don't replace it with anything. And as you said, with this critical theory, cultural Marxism, whatever you want to call it, it's sort of spiritually hollowed out a lot of these working class areas, which has probably made them a bit more desensitized to mass immigration from places like Pakistan or Bangladesh or wherever it is.
Well, I mean, most of the Northeast has got off lately on that. In north of it is in Newcastle a bit, but then once you get into Northumberland, it's like 97% white. I'm not sure about Middlesbrough, but we haven't been battered the way they have in Yorkshire and then down south. But the kind of working class ethic is an interesting one, because it's something that we've all, or me, my family, everybody's grown up with. And I noticed just over the last couple of years that everybody's beginning to see through it as being a bit of a sham, as being a bit of a con, because in the old days you were under sort of pressure to pay your own way and not be a burden on everybody else. But then once the society's gone, once everything's atomized, then you don't really have that burden anymore, which is why I thought that woman in the chip shop was just balmy, really, because I thought, well, her point of view was that there's nothing really else to do of any importance except work. And I thought, I could teach myself like Japanese, or I could like read philosophy, or write up my blog, or do YouTube videos, or whatever it happened to be. But her sort of her horizon just didn't stretch that far for her. It was just work. It was just, that was her lot. That's a common thing in the Northeast. But what happens is there used to be a source of pride. So my dad worked on he built ships on the Tyne. That was where he went after school. And you could at least take some pride in like building a ship. But eventually, you know, what happens if you end up in a chocolate factory putting the little stamps on a bar of chocolate or whatever, these horrible jobs now, and you're doing that on an agency? There's no, and you're going to have like a 22-year-old girl boss you around.
Oh God!
So I know that. I know of cases of men who started off in the pits working, because in their boxer shorts, half a mile underground, with a pickaxe scratching at the face of the coal face, and you know, doing proper real hard graft, and then they've ended up waiting for that retirement, being bossed around by like a 30-year-old woman, talking down to them like shit. That's the way it is. And the job itself is, everything's become feminized. So yeah. In a kind of low, in a, like a lower tier job, the health and safety regulations have completely removed any kind of masculinity. You're not even allowed to carry a Stanley knife around. You've got they take this weird Lego thing with like a plastic Lego hook. You've got to have health and safety to if you want to walk around with a pallet truck. You've got to have health and safety to show you how to pump it so you don't do your back in. Health and safety to climb a stair like ladders. And all of that. And the blokes who are having to do this used to sit on top of the big Geordie crane on the Tyne building 30,000 ton ships. And they would drink bottles of brown ale on the top of the crane when they had their stotty sandwiches at dinner time. My dad used to drink 5 pints of beer at work. That was wow. It was a completely different culture. The point that I'm trying to make is that they're trying to sort of bring that, like expecting that mentality to sort of carry on and perpetuate itself when you're stacking shelves in a supermarket in the middle of the night and having like a woman show you how to unbox the tampons or whatever the hell else it is they've got them doing. And right. finally, people are starting to say, you know what it is? I'd rather just be fucking poor than go through this.
I've never ever thought of it from that perspective, but this sort of health and safety culture and this feminization of work is international. I live in Chile, and they have these sort of health and safety regulations where you're not allowed to carry cement bags over 25 kilos, which isn't very much. And and it's also the quality of the jobs and the sort of the ends to which you're producing. For example, you have these enormous ships that your father was producing at the time. And I worked in banking for 3 years before I left the UK, but it's such a soul-destroying, soul-crushing job, because what is the end of that? It's just doing this pointless bit of administration just to change some numbers on a computer screen for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And it's not rewarding at all, which is why I always advocate my listeners to go outside and do at least a couple of hours of manual labor a week. Even if it's just in the garden mowing the lawn, if it's doing a bit of weeding, but you feel so much better for yourself. You feel like you're doing something worth preserving, that you're maintaining something beautiful, and you're sort of, I don't want to sound hippy-dippy, but you kind of have this sort of communion with nature, this sort of oneness with nature when you do this kind of manual labor outside. And also, just on a sort of slightly different note, what you're saying about how feminine these job roles have become, I'm hearing that one of the reasons why a lot of these police officers are doing all this sort of crazy virtue signaling, all this LGBT, QAI, CIA plus stuff on social media is because a lot of women haven't been able to cope as bobbies on the streets, so they get fast-tracked into middle management. So they're the ones who go out and start promoting all this SJW crap for just regular police officers to follow.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I mean, I don't follow the business of the police. I try and stay clear of them. I mean, I was about 4 or 5 years ago, me and me, I've got two brothers, and we had a bit of a run-in with them. And it was the one calling the shots was like a little dumpy woman, but she was backed up with like two big lads who could obviously handle themselves, but she was the mouthpiece. And I just thought, this is ridiculous, because normally it would be like one or two. Just like, I didn't understand why she needed to be there at all. Because at the end of the day, I mean, as a libertarian, you'll understand it does come down to just brute force. That's what they're there for. So a policewoman doesn't, she couldn't on her own handle any one of us on our own. And that's, I'm not, not that I'm some sort of hard ladder out. It's just the way it is, I'm afraid. So if she can't do the job on her own, I don't see what the point of it is. You may as well just send the two blokes out.
Right, exactly. And you probably saw that footage from the Notting Hill Carnival. I think it was last year where a gentleman of equatorial extraction was bumping and grinding against a very diminutive blonde police lady.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
I mean, are we just going to, just kid ourselves forever?
What do you mean?
that we can have this sort of physical equality between...
Oh, kid ourselves. I thought he said kill ourselves to kill
ourselves. Oh, no. Kill ourselves.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, the way I look at it is the stuff of the police is that it's not really my problem because they've got themselves into this mess. It's their ideology. It comes from the government. I said it was ridiculous from day one, and I kind of think, well, you know, get on with it. I'll leave them up to it. But I know one thing, then it's a weird thing because they are quite detested in the sort of the old industrial heartlands of the north, the northeast. The people don't like the police at all. They see them as being outsiders and intruders. And that was even sort of before all of this weird alien ideology crept into them as well.
Right, because I mean it is completely alien, and it's just intensifying with absurdity. Is who knows what they're going to virtue signal next? And you know, I mean, in places like Rotherham and Rochdale, where there's been all these grooming gang scandals, we have evidence that the police actually actively covered up what was going on in order not to create this racial rift within the country.
Yeah, I mean, I got into that on the Chernobyl video. I don't know if you saw it. I did a video on the Chernobyl thing, and it's very similar. That's the point of the video, was to point out how similar it was with the Soviet Union, except in the Soviet Union, it was the state that you couldn't question. In Britain, it's the cultural aspect of it.
Indeed. And, you know, well... It's more than just the police. I mean, it's embedded within the authorities, this kind of culture. And I don't know if you heard this, but somebody who tried to open the lid on the whole Rotherham scandal a few years before it actually broke the surface was sent on a diversity course. So effectively got sent to this form of Maoist re-education for trying to blow the scandal wide open.
No, I didn't. Have you ever actually been on a diversity course or in any kind of thing like that?
Yes, I actually had a half an hour diversity course when I worked at a bank, which bank it was, but I didn't sort of pay much attention to it because I wasn't sort of politically active back then.
I had to renew one of my forklift licenses about 4 years ago, and I went on a course. And it was just like a 2-hour thing that we had to go through. And it was all white men from around, you know, the Northeast. And you kind of go down to this center and it's like a week long course. And, you know, you have to get these stupid little tag ons. I had to go to, like, do a full course for one forklift license, and another one was just a renewal. So I was like, it was like a week job, and we had to do it all, and we're all sitting there, and I'm the instructor. I was a kind of middle aged white fella who, you know, you could tell he'd spent his life on the construction sites, and he was teaching us all of this stuff about, like, how we have to treat people of different races and different colors. And it was just so ridiculous. And I said, look, but what, it just like, because the meme was fresh in my mind, like 4 years ago or whatever. And I said, look, it just seems to me like diversity just means fewer white people. Like, well, you're teaching this. Can you? It is what it is, isn't it? And he turned around, this fat old fella, you know, burly old bloke. And he turned around and he just said, well, I can't say that, but I'm not going to tell you off for saying it. Well, I just can't say that because it's my job. And it's like everybody knows that it's dodgy crap, but they've got no choice but to sort of peddle it.
Yeah. And it's not in sort of, you know, as you know, banks are heavily involved in promoting this kind of stuff. Financiers are very involved in promoting this kind of stuff. Major corporations on the whole. I remember, now that you mentioned that, I remember once in one of these courses, one of these training courses at a bank I worked at, they wanted it's along the same vein as what you're talking about, but it was a lot more implicit. So you're meant to treat everybody equally, even if they're sort of very sharply dressed, wearing a Giorgio Armani suit. You want to treat them the same as somebody wearing, shall we say, FUBU jeans, Ed Harris hoodie, and say Nike Air Force Ones, and with a menacing look. So they really try to embed this into you wherever you are. And I think this kind of ties into a lot of what we're talking about before the stream with the whole woke capital / globo homo stuff.
That yeah.
a lot of corporations are very keen on it. And it's kind of paradoxical that the mainstream right in a lot of Europe, probably with the exception of maybe France and Germany, because I know New Right's philosophy is pretty anti-corporatist, pretty anti-neoliberal. But there's this weird marriage between the right and this adoration for big business and this sort of really rehashed, really absurd abstraction of free market economics. And it's really bizarre when you see them clearly promoting political causes which are antithetical to your worldview.
Yeah, and what's strange, I mean, I mentioned about sort of the Thatcher, and I wonder what she would make of this, because it's as if big business has stabbed them in the back. It's as if big business, woke capital, has turned around, and you for years and years, you've had all of these sort of people on the right. Basically, they've been exposed as just a complete sham. Because once the capital's turned around and stabbed any kind of traditional ordered society, just basic common decency at the end of the day, all of a sudden the capital's just turned around and stabbed them in the back. And so now these conservatives are in a weird position because woke capital's gone with the left. And you think, well, what are you going to do now? And I mean, what I was saying just before we went live there, I was watching Superman 2 from the 1980s, because I was thinking about doing a review on it to follow up another video that I did. And it's really quite, it batters over the head just how obvious and blatant the product placement is in that Superman 2. And it's a very kind of patriotic film as well. It's very, you know, he's a good boy scout and everybody loves a president. When General Zod takes over, it's basically the American president is the president of the world. And you can kind of get that kind of, I think they got the mix just right there. But I mean, you know, Superman gets thrown through a truck of Marlboro cigarettes. One of the Kryptonites or whatever they're called, Kryptonians, gets thrown through an absolute gigantic Coca-Cola neon sign. It's everywhere you look in the movies, our product placement. And yet, you could see that in the 1980s, it was on board with a sort of Reaganite civic nationalism that was around at the time. And I think the right sort of assumed that that happy partnership would go on and on. And what's happened, what we were now like 30 odd years later, that whole vision of the Boy Scout America and Americana, which is in Superman 2 as well, that was the woke capital would just hate that now because it's standing in the way of opening up new markets and standardizing the whole world.
Yeah, and you're completely right. And the way the Overton window is shifting, not just in a sort of an overt political sphere, but in a more subtle sense, and like maybe a more meta-political way, is just out of control. I was talking with a couple of friends on Twitter about how movies such as District 9 and Lord of War wouldn't be made today for how they represent certain African gentlemen in their films. That you cannot have that. I mean, this is moving away from the overt product placement within Superman 2. But, you know, it just doesn't make sense how you have these so-called conservatives sort of yearning for a return of this Reaganite era, which was arguably one of the worst administrations in 20th century American history. Probably barring the exception of Woodrow Wilson. And that's being quite generous. I mean, you know, think about what he did to California. He turned it into a Democrat stronghold for the rest of time by giving amnesty to 3 million. He imposed extra gun control legislation and a whole slew of other policies which proved to be pretty damaging to the current fabric of America as well. And then you look at these other sort of center-right parties, when they're in power, they do nothing to sort of, well, they don't give anything back to their base. The highest load of immigration in Germany came under a so-called center-right party under Merkel. In Spain, the first few waves of mass immigration came under a so-called center-right party. And you know, in the UK, well, the center-right has been worse than useless. If anything, the center-right, and with the inclusion of neocons in America, all they've really done is delegitimize the right as a force against globalism and cultural leftism.
I think, yeah, I mean, the worst, I think philosophically, the right shouldn't really be betting the farm on economics at all. I think the natural place of the right should be in matters of culture and identity. And we can let the left, who are, at the end of the day, obsessed with materialism, they can kind of bicker and argue about economics against a portion of the right. But I would have most sort of right-wing forces deployed in the cultural arena, but it was an area where they just ceded everything to the left because they thought, well, if we get the economics right, none of the rest matters, which was being a catastrophic failure. Absolutely disastrous, because I think when you get into the culture and what's happening in the culture, where it's sort of even in the air that people are breathing, then yeah, it doesn't really matter what your economics are. That was the whole point of the New Left, and the right was just useless, and up to the point now where I just don't see what they can stand for anymore. I don't see the point.
Right, I completely agree with you, and even on the economic side, they weren't able to preserve what they intended to promote. They wanted to have more deregulation, more tax cuts, but they still haven't been able to do that because they're just so spineless on the whole. And you know, they should be going back to a cultural ground. And one of the reasons why libertarianism is so popular among sort of right-wing neophytes, and you know, I err on the side of caution when I say that, because it's just heavily materialistic. What it is just an economic refutation of socialist principles which have been almost 100 years, and it just keeps people pinned within sort of a materialist framework and not branching out into more important things such as identity and culture, which is something that desperately needs to be reclaimed, especially in places like the UK and a lot of parts of America.
It's sort of the other side to the kosher sandwich, isn't it, with Marxism on one side and libertarianism on the other, but both are just purely materialistic.
Exactly.
It's no good, because I mean, what we're getting into before as well was where about authenticity. These are the things that the right should be looking at, because what we're talking about on the north as well is that, have you seen these pubs that pop up now all over the place? And they'll pop up there's loads of them on the outskirts of Newcastle, and they're sort of fake authentic English pubs. And you can see, and it's that they build them. It looks like they've been there for 800 years, but they've been there for about 18 months. And then they've got like a Holiday Inn complex attached to them, and then like a McDonald's on the other side. And the pubs as well are always like so. It's as if they've gone over the top. And whereas traditionally, like an English pub would be called like the Fox and the Hound or the Queen's Head, these ones have got like extra trad names. They'll call them like the Badger's Wink, or you know, like the Otter's Fanny. It's all making it so authentic that it's just like a replica. And I the pub where I go is like, it's because, and the problem is they're conscious of themselves. And the pub where I go is just an English pub, but it's like I go there because I can take the dog in and have a pint. But that does mean that in reality, all of the legs of the tables have been chewed and gnawed by dogs. There's bowls of water all over the floor that you're tripping over. There's biscuits on the floor that crunch when you walk on them. The carpet's a complete mess. There's dogs running around all over the place. But at least it's a proper pub, and it isn't a sort of self-conscious parody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that there's almost this yearning to sort of refined identity in a lot of places, because I just see Westerners as a whole being completely hollowed out, and people need identity. They need things to be able to decode just just data and noise. They need to be able to sort of derive meaning, extract meaning from just life in general. And the way to do that when you're not allowed to find identity in the nation, in religion, or in your community, beyond, say, maybe what part of the town you're from, if you're a supporter of a football club, is brands. So this is why there's all this product placement, because they are offering a form of identity where there is none. And you see a lot of people walking around wearing similar brands, sort of Nike, Adidas, Reebok, whatever it could be. And that is filling in a void which is needed to be filled by something greater than just a consumer brand. And I think this return to trying to maybe refine one's roots in a hyper-traditional pub, it may come across as a bit inauthentic, because they're really trying too hard and it's not natural, it's forced. It doesn't really seem to be a product of culture as much as just a ploy to attract consumers.
Well, yeah, what's interesting is that the idea of an authentic English pub does actually exist. So, our enemies will say that people like us are we're harking back to a past which never really existed. And yet, when you want to make a pub and have a brand, you know what an authentic English pub is. And so then to dig a little bit deeper, you think, well, why is it that English people are attracted to that? And it is an idea in the minds of English people that signals sort of comfy, safe and traditional, and they like it, even if they do lay it on a bit thick in some of these pubs. Maybe I'm being a bit of a snob, I'm being a pub snob, but the point is, there is an ideal that they're going for, and it does exist. And like you say, there is this, people investing a lot of money into recreating or trying to recreate what's been lost. It does exist within the minds of our people.
Yeah, that's right. And I think what you said about how a pub is often associated with safety and friendliness is pretty well distilled in the film Shaun of the Dead, how they desperately try to get to the Winchester in order to barricade themselves in, get a nice pint, and wait for the whole thing to blow over, as it were in the film. But It's just something that seems to be lost, especially in the more urban and cosmopolitan places like London and Birmingham. I was in Birmingham in 2013, and oh my gosh, it was a completely foreign country. Apart from the students there was nobody British, pretty much, where I was staying. And
I passed through it last year, just in the train station. It was enough. It was horrible.
As you can tell by my accent, I grew up in a suburb in northwest London, and some of my earliest memories walking with my dad, about 3-4 years old, he'd be greeting everybody in the street. Fast forward 9-10 years, and everyone's desperately trying to avoid eye contact, and I think that's because there's something fundamentally un-British with the people who are there. My dad and my mum were harassed by a gang of, shall we say, youths in the mid-80s, in the middle of the summer. That they were beeping the horn, they were shouting slurs, abuse at my mum. And this stuff has been going on for 30-plus years. And we have evidence of girls being attacked in Rotherham for longer than that. And, I am happy. I am very white-pilled at the state of things. Not the state of things, but the fact that there is this energy towards trying to refine our roots, our traditions, and everything that gives us sort of meaning and identity and purpose, which is actually quite good to see in a certain regard. But at the same time, it's indicative of a wider social problem, which is people have just become so addicted to consumerism. What do you think?
Yeah, it is. Well, when you, the idea, of course, is that if you look at it from the other side, somebody who wasn't a traditionalist would say that it would be liberating to be able to, in effect, create your own identity. So everybody then is a special, literally like a sort of special snowflake, and what you choose to whatever trainers you wear, what clothes you have, what car you drive, And then whatever, you know, whatever you do in bed, like that's that, all of that is your self-made identity. And that's how it was sort of, I got into this on the last stream as well, where that was actually preempted. That's actually a bit of a hippie dream, but it was preempted by big business right from the off. It sounds great in theory, but then the problem is when you zoom the camera out and you look back down on it, you've got all of these billions of atomized units of consumption, but each one individually thinks there's something unique and special about them. Then when you pan the camera right the way back out, you're just looking down at, as I said in the Godzilla video, just a human blob. It's just a nondescript mass of consumers. And so people are trying to sort of navigate their way around this while at the same time not tripping over all of the sort of the thought crimes and the speech controls that are in place. I mean, that's another problem that we face, is that if you want to get back to something more rooted, more authentic, our enemies, whoever they may be, who we can't talk about on YouTube now, it's as they've blocked off all of the paths. And you can see it's a bit like where people hunt rabbits, and they fill in all of the holes, all of the escape routes, except one. I mean, in the case of sort of European people, they're filling them all in. That's the thing. They fill them all in except rampant degeneracy. So they could have overplayed their hand a little bit there.
Well, I think they've totally overplayed their hand in almost every respect, and people are starting to gain more of an appreciation for these organic things which, you know, which can't be commodified, these things which money can't buy. And you're completely right in the sense that, since I always advocate for people to, if they're going to read history or study history, to try to find books written before political correctness really sort of got a stranglehold on society, so pre-World War II. History books, in order to get a fuller picture of events that happened. And you know, there is this disconnection between people and their past. For a lot of whites in particular, they're told that all their heroes were actually villains, they're all evil, they're racist, they're enslavers, they're genocidal maniacs, but they can't take any credit for the good stuff that their ancestors did, or the good stuff their tribe did as a whole. So you know, I was saying this on a stream I had over the weekend, that this is one of the first times in history where you have a bunch of people who have just been so guilted and demoralized that they don't want to reproduce. They don't want to have families because they think that there's something inherently evil with their offspring, or they want to sort of be exogamous and sleep with people from other groups in order to dilute their evil genes, so to speak.
As I mean, When I would look at it, yeah, I mean, I know that's a problem, but I would look at it, a lot of it is that the problem with the woman, the white woman question as well. Yeah. There's no social pressure on white women whatsoever. Even if you leave aside the out groups, we've got some really serious problem with white women. It has to be said, and I'm not even going to say it's all down to them and their fault. The problem is there's no controlling them. There's no social pressure that's gone, and they run around like tramps and treat a relationship. I want to read out some super chats, and then, because you know, people are going to get a little bit triggered by this, but you know, I'll get into a story after I read some super chats.
Sure.
Right. So first of all, thank you very much, everybody, for the super chat. It's that Irish name again that I cannot say. Rhiann Mac an Braith am Hanai. I had a go at it. The church is gone, but Stonehenge is eternal. I think that was made by a cheddar man anyway, if you believe that. We didn't even build it. John EJ 999, thank you very much, John. Loved in that new video on modern art in Yorkshire. Had to confirm with a friend that I saw was in Leeds City Centre. Sadly, it is. What a disgrace. It's absolutely hideous, isn't it? Rhiann Mac an Braithwaite again. Refer me to Prevent and I'll tape it. I would stay well away from that. I would stay right away from Prevent. Don't get yourself mixed up with that. Don't trigger them. Don't wind them up. And then Re and Mac and Brave and the game for another £2. Yara's £2. Now review the Viz. Thanks for the £2. I'm not reviewing the Viz. That would just be too much of a parody. Ginger Roden. Thanks, Ginger. £2. Keep up the good work, chaps. We will. Lucy Brown. Oh, hey. Alt-right superstar. Alt-light superstar Lucy Brown for £2. Huma Baba for... Oh, that's that one that made that awful work of art, I know, in the last video that I did. Thanks a lot, Lucy. Steve Ben Bob, £2. No message. Thanks a lot. Charlemagne, $5. Something we have to acknowledge is that parts of tradition are lost to us. It's something Evola talks about. There's no going back, only forward. Yeah, that's thanks a lot, Charlemagne. Yeah, that's a true point. You can't. It is broken in a way. So many things are broken because what I was talking about with about the English church, the English pub before, is that you are conscious of these new ones, that they haven't been there for 800 years. That's kind of why it does matter there. So the one where I go to, where I'm tripping over all of these bulls all the time and all the legs, the dogs have chewed all the legs off the tables, you're not really conscious of yourself actually being in a real pub, but you are. It's just that you're trying to avoid the dog piss on the floor. But when it's these really hyper-sterile new ones, like the Bad Jazz Fanny, all these owls wink, like it's you are conscious and you are aware of it, and it's what I think what Heidegger got to, whereas if you think of a carpenter, and he's got the hammer in his hand, and while he's immersed in his work, he's not actually conscious of the hammer. It's when you actually if the hammer breaks, all of a sudden he's conscious of it again. And this is with so many of our problems, is that there isn't really a going back. Then you end up LARPing it. You end up like sort of faking it and pretending it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you get around that, except just to sort of plow on forward, and ride the tiger, as Charlemagne was saying there, to get through it all, one way or another. So, have you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, on the question to returning to tradition, yeah, like, if you try to resurrect any former political regimes, it's not going to look like that at all. It has to come naturally and authentically, and it can't be sort of stressed out. I think you're going to have to rebuild something and make it better than what it was before, while keeping the past as a blueprint for the future, and keeping the past as roots, as an anchor to sort of keep you, prevent you from drifting away in maybe a sea of relativism, and to make sure that you don't get too lost from who you are.
Yeah, and we know who we are because, as I was saying again, just to use the pub as an example, just to sort of hang these ideas on, that ideal still does exist in our minds. I think a lot of it is trying to politicize that. This all sounds very abstract and a little bit out there. I think it's it doesn't get you banned from things either to talk about these subjects. But when you do tap into that and you can politicize it as a positive force, you end up with something like National Socialism in Germany. So, but we'll not go into that. What I was going to say, just leave that hanging there. What I was going to say about the woman question as well was that this is probably in newspapers, by the way. There's a lad about 10 mile up the road there, and he was doing 12-hour shifts, and he had a girlfriend, and she was pregnant, and with his baby, and he was doing everything he could. He wanted to get a deposit for a house, scandalously amount of money. And then one day, everything was going grand. And then one day, he just about to finish it, worked like a dog, did the right thing, and got a text message. And she said he was still at work, and she said she was sick of it. And then she'd lived a bit down south in Durham or somewhere, and she basically just went away. And he knew that that was that, and it was all for nothing, and that all of the entire system would be against him, and the access for the child, everything like that. And he, this is probably in the newspapers, he took a Stanley knife out and slit his own throat. Can you believe that?
Wow.
He was so devastated by this, that this little bitch fucked over a good man and did off. And he was just completely distraught with it, that he looked in front of a mirror and sliced his own throat open with a Stanley knife. Now, look, the problem there, there's a lot going on there, but he was fulfilling his part of the bargain. What was expected of him as a man, he was fulfilling. And that little bitch, there's no social pressure on her whatsoever to not do that, you know?
Yeah, I do go into this kind of stuff in the book as well, that, you know, women don't have any responsibilities to fulfill. A lot of the time you have these women who are perhaps single mothers with a couple of kids, and they aren't aware of the fact that the sexual market value is just through the floor right now. I mean, that you can't expect to have a sort of a 6'4" dude earning six figures in order to provide for you if you have nothing to bring to the table. And there's this almost this entitlement and expectation I see in a lot of white women in particular, where they want to have this all this hypergamy but not give anything in return for it. But that's absolutely shocking. I bet you she wouldn't even shed a tear for him. It's almost sociopathy.
I don't know. It was quite a big thing up here. The problem is, it's like, I've been there. I think most men have been there, where you're think everything's going great. You know, you're going to plan out a future together, and then you just get a text message out of the blue that it's over. And look, the problem with that is that there's no. It's just like what your book's about. It's just this throwaway culture. It's just, yeah, well, the end of the day, come tomorrow. And now in a normal kind of society, it is actually natural for the men to be able to do that if they can get away with it. It's not normal when women can behave like that with no social consequences whatsoever. You know, the feminists, they would say that Christianity was actually just the patriarchy controlling the female, like European women's sexuality, and they would see that as being oppressive. Well, look, and then you'll have a kind of centrist saying, well, it was all about the sort of traditional family and stuff. But now that things are so broken, we can just be honest about it and say, you know what it is? Yeah, it was to control the female sex drive. And that was a good thing. It was a good thing that happened. And of course, people don't like you when you're too authoritarian, because we're just riddled with liberalism. But we can say now, yeah, it was actually a good thing that we controlled the female sex drive like that.
Right, right. And just to follow on from that, I mean, there would be less pressures on a man to do something like that. But within sort of a tightly lit community, the man would probably be ostracized, and there would be pressures for him to actually step up to the plate, be a man, and take on that his mistakes. That's what, you know, shotgun weddings used to be for. If you knock somebody up, you can't run away, where you don't have this sort of heavy R selection strategy within your society, because ultimately that's just going to lead to what we have now, which is high time preference, consumerism, and atomization. But the fact of the matter is, women can get away with that, and we're just bombarded with these narratives in the press, in the media, in academia, everywhere else, where women can have all these cheap thrills, and by the time, you know, the sexual market value has gone over the hill, then it's time to settle down and find a nice guy who's age appropriate and wants to settle down and have a family with her. But unfortunately, where have all the good guys gone? Well, they settled for somebody who wasn't imbued in this sort of cancerous critical theory or cultural Marxism, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah. So again, it's this it's very easy to say, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, but you can't do it unless you have some form of cultural control. And a lot of this comes down to raw power. And, you know, but people, even in sort of dissident right circles, there's a sort of wink and a bit of a don't say it out loud, especially when we're in this sort of tenuous position of extreme weakness and being hunted down and doxxed and deplatformed left, right, and center. It's like this is the worst time you could speak about these things. But I think we are going to have to kind of speak about it. Otherwise, it's just pretending. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and funnily enough, as you say this, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, when people were starting to get a bit worried about the migrant crisis and perhaps the possibility of Islamic terrorism, people would be decrying Sharia law. And now you see articles of this nature every day in the tabloid press. And if you just look at the comments beneath them, always there'll always be something along the lines of, well, Sharia law doesn't actually sound too bad now, does it? Of that nature. Obviously, it's tongue-in-cheek, but people are sort of becoming deconditioned to feminism and waking up to the fact that a lot of women need to have more social pressures to prevent them from doing this stuff. Women tend to be more obviously maternal and sort of more okay and liberal when it comes to people doing these sort of wayward things, so to speak, which is a huge problem that we have, that society on the whole has just become so feminine. Where the real men? I mean, a lot of it has to do with just the fact that there's no need to exert any energy or to be disciplined because you have every consumer good at your disposal. You don't even need to go to the shop now. You can just get anything at the touch of a button. You could work some cubicle job that pays handsomely and have pretty much everything that you need right there. And of course, there is a lot of we kind of live in the social justice panopticon where everyone just self-polices, and if you step out of line, well, that's your reputation gone, that's you and your family without any income. So there's a lot at stake here at the moment, and I think more and more people are simply just not giving a toss about not speaking the truth, which is good to see, but it's just the sorry state of affairs that you need to risk your well-being just to speak the truth.
Yeah, I think once the spell is broken on the sort of the sexual stuff and relationships for men and women, that is a big part of the battle, you know. Because it's all very well to sit around and moan about all these immigrants and stuff, and of course I've done it for years in great depth. But the fact is, the reason why we've got to look into more into why we are in such a weak position. What went wrong with us that we're in this mess? Because the government isn't going to do anything. We're going to have to strengthen ourselves.
Exactly. And it has to begin with us. I think there needs to be something more than just a political awakening in consciousness. There has to be a sort of a meta political shift where people's lifestyles reflect the political outcomes they wish to see. Which means having to step up to the plate and sort of becoming more disciplined and finding a good woman, which is pretty hard to do these days, but there are places where you can find them, and sort of living a lifestyle which will reflect the society you want to see, and sort of advocating this, because a lot of normies, a lot of people who still live that party 3 days a week lifestyle and sort of working a meaningless job, they're going to see that their friends who have a family are infinitely happier than they are, just living it up and partying and sleeping around with strangers, because there is no reward to that. I mean, I lived that lifestyle when I was in my late teens, and that was, you know, I had fun, but that was the most miserable time of my life at the same time.
Yeah, I used to go on the piss to Newcastle, and I used to love to sit with the lads in a pub, in a small pub in Newcastle called the Printer's Pie. And then when it got later on and it was like all of the really busy bars, I just hated it. But you're under this pressure to kind of pretend that you like it and that you cannot speak. The music's too loud. It's you're crammed in there like sardines. I absolutely hated it. But you're like, well, why do I hate it? I shouldn't hate it. This is having a good time. And I worked all week for that shit as well. But yeah, it was just crap, actually.
It's a shame that you'd blow your earnings on something like that. And same here. I mean, Now, just the idea of going out to a nightclub is just the worst thing I can possibly imagine. Just a bunch of D-I-C-K heads dancing around and a bunch of thoughts. And, you know, what's worse? The stench of some alcohol and bad perfume. And it's dreadful. And it's
horribly. You've got you've got the lucky lucky men in the toilets now.
Oh God!
You didn't have that. I mean, it's terrible, terrible thing to say. But up here, they call them the Bogwog. Which I think I'm safe. I think I'm safe with that. Aria's going to tell us off in a minute, but I think that's okay. I don't think that'll be picked up by YouTube's algorithms. I'm going to move swiftly on to reading out some super chats anyway. Rhiann Mac and Brayton, hi again for £2. You have the same DNA as Cheddar Man. Well, that's what I was told. Whatever. Mark Britton, £5. Thanks a lot, Mark. We live in a chain shop, fashion bistro, pub, clown world, devoid of depth and meaning. Everything is cheap and easy, including the women. Yep, that's... Yeah. Well, I don't even know if they're that cheap, but they're definitely... Ugh. Yeah, meaningless. The Wii Goran, £1.99. Thank you very much. Open a pub for our sort called the Owl's Wink. Okay, that would be a good. What would you call it? A sort of dissident right pub, so that everybody kind of knows, but the normies can still go along, but then they're not in on it, like a secret society. We'd have to have a dissident right pub.
Oh, I'm going to have to do a bit of research to find a beer that might have naughty roots, shall we say.
Worm Disc, £3.20, £2. No message. Thank you very much. Steve Ben Bob, £2. Do you think 5G will be the ultimate control? Now, I'm going to have to pass that on because I am absolutely crap with technology. That's, as far as I'm aware, that's some internet thing in Israel or something, but I really don't know. Do you know something about that?
No, all I've seen is memes that it's meant to be very radioactive and causes cancer in children, but I don't know how much credibility there is to that.
I see 5G popping up all over the place, and I haven't got a clue what it is. Chuck Fall for $5. Just want to support the show. Cheers, Chuck. Lady Rotha, £10. No message. Lady Rotha likes me. She always pops up in the comments. Thank you very much, Lady Rotha. So, right, where were we? Back on the pubs?
Well, the lucky, lucky man.
I think I'm not going to... That's me risk. That's me YouTube risk for the day there.
I never heard that one before, but I did hear recently that in Ibiza, some guy in one of the club streets got anally raped by a lucky, lucky man, they're saying.
But where?
In Ibiza, I think it was in San Antonio.
There's a funny thing because I swear down that no man is going to be able to anally rape me. Like, I would be dead. He'd have to do it when I was dead. And there's a fella there that taught me like really a lot called guest worker for Majority Rights, and he used to make this argument against homosexuality. And he pointed out that it was about sort of natural law. And he would point out to the sort of liberals that, you know, women, I don't want to get too into what Black Pigeon Speaks got into on this, because this is dodgy stuff as well. But yeah, women won't fight to the death to stop themselves from being raped, but a man actually would. And there's a lot, again, it's an uncomfortable truth. I'm really going to be called out for the treatment that women have had on this stream tonight. But the fact is, there is some truth to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. And I'm, you know, Eastern European history comes to mind with the encroachment of the Ottomans, because I don't think that a lot of the, shall we say, intermingling there was consensual. And you could probably, this is a very, very spicy take, but you could probably sort of pathologize the modern liberal woman was something similar to that, because a lot of the modern liberal women in cities are surrounded by these very effete, very weak, soy boy stereotype men. And in a way, that's probably why they don't want to sleep with them, the male feminist trope, or, you know, sort of maybe a limp-wristed queer fella. And this is probably why they're so maybe impartial to importing people from, shall we say, the Middle East, because there's more virility associated with them. There's more masculinity. They don't really give a crap about this whole idea of there needs to be some very low-T courtship involved. And they might just, I'm just going to boil it down and say, without jeopardizing your YouTube channel, that there's probably more of a willingness to import people who men who are more sexually assertive, shall we say.
Yeah. And there's the basic, a more basic one, which is that they're increasing the amount of males in the living space as well.
Yeah, that's bound to cause more conflict, as we all know.
Let's look at it in a different way. What would it be like if this was? By the way, I'm totally ripping off an old Daily Stormer article here, which I thought was fascinating. But it was raising this question: what would it be like if we were getting mass immigration? Because, you know, at the time, the refugee crisis, it really was young sort of German women and stuff coming out the most and doing this. It is a thing that young white women seem to be weakest for. And I know people, like, there's some debate around that, but they'll say that, oh, well, Trump, you got Trump because of us. But the thing is, let's switch it around. I'd love to know what the sort of the feminist types, refugees, welcome types, how would they feel if we were getting mass immigration, but it was like 90% of the immigrants were like sort of young girls from Japan and South Korea. Like all of this. So it would be like that the whole of Britain was just being flooded and all of the, like, the white men were just going mad on yellow fever. And it seems to me that would be one hell of a fucking wake-up call for a lot of these white women, these lefty white women. I've got to make that caveat there. But I think they'd begin to see, they wouldn't, because then they would be in direct competition, even if they are cat ladies and stuff, they'd be in direct competition with all this sort of young breeding material. And I know it's race mixing and stuff. I'm not getting into that here. It's a purely hypothetical situation where, in terms of the sexual market, you would totally swing it in your favor. And all of the men in the country, or a disproportionate amount of men, were all saying, yeah, we want like 5 million Japanese girls imported between the ages of like 18 and 25. And if you don't like that, then you're just a hateful bigot. I'd love to see how that conversation would go.
No, and I think that we will both expect the same outcomes. They're basically just form groups advocating the deportation or the repatriation of all these women who recently came in. And that's again...
Yeah, that would be funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that just calls into question what you're saying earlier. That sort of just underlines what you're saying earlier about there being no social pressures. I mean, that would, the introduction of all these happer chicks or thick Latinas would be a new social pressure, insofar as women would have to behave better and try to keep their man as a provider if there were all these extra women who were competing for, shall we say, sperm in this case, just added into the equation overnight.
Yeah. And somebody in the chat just said there's a race mixing alert. Well, let's just change it. And we'll, instead of them being Japanese or whatever, we'll change it to like Russians or whatever it is you want. You know, the same thing applies as a thought experiment.
But right. on a serious note, though, I mean, there are both economic and social incentive structures which, you know, make women capable of doing these horrible things where they, you know, carry a man's child and then just run off without a care in the world, because they can turn sort of having kids as a lifestyle by claiming child benefits in some places, welfare, for example. And on the other hand, you'll have these armies of BuzzFeed writer types who will just come to their defense and say that you're the bigot for not letting that woman realize her potentiality by being free. Yeah. I think it was iHypocrite who took a Reddit post from, but it was something similar. I can't remember exactly what happened, but it was similar to this story that you're telling me of the woman leaving and the man committing suicide in a ghastly way. And then all the Redditors were just upvoting it and downvoting anybody who disagree. It's just a world of inversion where we're living in at the moment.
I mean, where this happened, like here in the Northeast, for working class people, they're not very politically correct, which is why I like it and why I'm home here. because very few people have been through university. So in that, you're looking at a form of social control, which isn't directly political, but more local. But the, you know, it had that, that's what I, right at the start of the stream, I was saying when the church has just died away. And that was a form of social control, and it was one, a good one as well. So you go back just 30 years, and that would be in a happily married couple now. I mean, I will say something else related to this is that even amongst sort of women on the right, there's a problem where you can get too carried away waiting for like Prince Charming to come along and not just be realistic. I look at my ancestors and I find it hard to believe any of them were actually in love. I'm starting to think there's something fishy about that where, you know, in the past, there was like a woman, a girl was a burden for the dad to get rid of. Or palm it off on some chap. And then if she had a roof over her head and she was satisfying him and she was kept warm and she was safe, that would be a happy marriage. Whereas now it's like everybody thinks they've got to be Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet on the front of the Titanic, that there's going to be this magical, mysterious, overwhelming force coming in, and it's not going to happen, and people sit around all their fucking lives waiting for it. People should be happy with little.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw this tweet, but when Harry and Meghan got married, on that day, that some person on woke Twitter sent out a tweet saying that, ladies, don't settle for anything less. You too can find your prince. It's never too late. And it got about 120,000 likes or something completely absurd, which basically just it confirms what you're saying about this sort of female hypergamy. And again, it is a sort of a meta narrative just shunted in entertainment where you can find the love of your life even if you're, you know, past your highest point of fertility.
Even if you're 35, you've been round on the cock carousel for 20 years and you've got a tattoo of like some bloke's name on your arse cheek, this Prince Charming will still arrive, just believe.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to read out a few super chats.
Sure.
Charlemagne, $5. Thank you very much, Charlemagne. 5G conspiracy theories exist because people are trying to find scapegoats to explain why they are so paused instead of examining their own souls. So, it could well be the case. I don't even know enough about it to make a comment on that. Do you, Orwell?
I don't know, but there just seems to be more and more of a desire for quicker and cheaper thrills, and maybe, you know, 5G's quickness can deliver that to some people.
Right. Nick X, £5. Thank you very much. Heard about the new multicultural pub in Newcastle. It's called the I Atollah, and it serves Newcastle Brown. Boom. That's fucking awful. Like, Christ almighty. I'll still be telling it to me mate though. It reminds us of an older joke as well. I'm gonna do it live on air. This is actually a true story. An old mate of mine went on holiday to Turkey and he'd been on the piss all day, he could barely walk, and he walked back to the he walked into the bar at the hotel and he was stumbling all over the place. And the Turkish waiter came over and my mate turned up to him. And he looked up at the Turkish waiter. He says, obviously a broad Geordie accent. He says, I'm hammered. And then the Turkish waiter, and the Turkish waiter turned around, he says, "No, I'm Hamad." And then my mate turned around, he says, "No, I'm Hamad." And then the Turkish waiter turned around, and, "No, fuck you, I'm Hamad." Anyway, many a laugh in the big market with that one. So we've got Propagandi, $5. Thank you very much. Some liberal women that I see are trading sex for political conversion. It's like they are sex priestesses for the Church of Liberalism. I don't know what he means there. What do you make of that one?
But perhaps they get bigger kicks or their rocks off, dopamine hits from virtue signaling, perhaps, or just showing how good a person they are to their peers by saying, "Let in all these immigrants," or whatever it could be.
Right. That's an interesting one, that. Evil Moif, DKK, for, I think that's Danish krona. Would you chat with academic agent? I might do if I've got time. I tend to just stick me on channel, really. I am aware of him. I don't know that much about him. I know who he is. He seems all right. He's got that George Sanders, is it? I'll check him out. Lady Rotha for £5 and just a kiss. You get a wink back there, lady. Rianne Mack and Braytham Ha. Sure the young Sid the Sexist pet. Well, they're getting it tonight. They're going full Sid the Sexist tonight. I just checked the video. I thought I'd have a hell of a lot more downvotes than what I did, like, but maybe the ladies just like hard truths. what have we got out now? Do we call it a day? Let's have a look at the live chat, unless you've got any other points. Academically, I'll check him out. I'm aware of him vaguely. I think he's a libertarian, sort of libertarian, libertarian YouTube. But I don't know. I find it difficult to have sort of. I'm just not into economics at all. I just find it really tedious subject.
I was into it for about 2 years. I've actually done a master's in it, and I just got so bored of it by the end of it that I don't really have much to do with it. And, you know, like 95% of the population don't give a crap. As long as there's bread on the table and the family's well fed, that's all they care about, really. And, you know, we've seen how disastrous neoliberal economics has been for the soul. We've seen how bad Keynesian economics has been too. We've seen how destructive Marxian economics have been, you know, in the early 20th century as well. So yeah. Take your pick.
There's a thing, I think I might have mentioned this before. Have you seen the clip on YouTube by a famous economist where he's talking about the free market and he's using the example of the pencil?
Yes, Leonard Reed.
I've found that to be just a horrifying way to look at the world. So he's saying the lead is made in like Algeria, the wood that they're getting from Peru, and the rubber is coming from, somewhere in Africa. And then you add it all up, and it sort of that all the different pieces what make the pencil come together, and it's everybody in the world is part of this network. And he's saying that's like a positive thing. This is great. This is the free market at work. And I actually found it to be quite horrific, because if they can do that with parts of a pencil, then they can do that with ethics and morality and people. It's as if you're seeing the seeds of globalism being planted there. But I do understand that a sort of an empiricist would just say, you end up with a pencil for 10 pence.
Right. And, a lot of this free market economics has got this ulterior motive, which is globalism. I don't think you can really have free markets economics within a sort of very nationalistic country. There's always going to be more of a willingness for more socialistic, or at least welfareism to a certain degree. and protectionism as well, and, you know, making sure industries don't die too soon, and if they are going to go obsolete eventually, at least give the workers a chance to retrain or find something else or hone the skills in something, and not just let it just vanish in a couple of years.
It's a funny thing because it's related to this, but people in the chat want a hot take on Morrissey and what, you know, being more right wing and all of what he's been saying. And it has been there. One of my favorite Morrissey song is Every Day Is Like Sunday, and it's directly related to what we've been getting into today. I think it's in Bognor Regis or somewhere like that. It could be Scarborough. The video to it anyway, and he really is like this whole song, Every Day Is Like Sunday, is like this long sort of meditation on a seaside town in England where all of the life has been sucked out of it. And the reason why that happened was because of cheap holidays in Spain, mm-hmm. In the 1980s. And so what you ended up with was these ghost towns. Blackpool was another victim.
Yes.
And I loved that, and I couldn't really explain why, but a lot of that sort of melancholia spoke to a lot of people, but before they knew that he had quite reactionary views on the world, and they kind of liked it. And it's interesting to me that all these lefty liberals that I saw on Twitter today all sticking the boot in, and they were all kind of saying like, well, you know, oh, I can't believe it. I'm going to burn all my CDs. And I learned music from the Smiths and from Morrissey. And I thought, but you still liked it, though, even though it was like a reactionary take. The reactionary take that he had is still valid. It's just that you've been brainwashed by the machine.
Yeah, and I think what's good about it is that, you know, from maybe a left-wing perspective, it addresses the soullessness and the deterritorialization of modern capitalism insofar as, you know, you can be offered cheaper package holidays to go overseas. So, but the more reactionary take is that something from the past has been lost, and that, again, it goes towards the soullessness of how people much rather go to Alicante or Benidorm than, say, Blackpool. And just on a side note, I was in Blackpool a few years ago. Oh my goodness, it's one of the most depressing places I've ever been in my life. Everyone looks ill there. It's yeah. Really, really sad. Really, yeah. Really sad. I heard they relocated a lot of people from a prison population up there, which is why you might have a higher concentration of people who just don't look generally content with life.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. But I mean, there's a lot of them, and some of them haven't even been that. I mean, Blackpool. There's been some funny things going on in Blackpool with the newer residents and the local girls. But even in places, you know, to have the heart ripped out of your tongue. And again, it was like what we were saying, where this was supposedly right wing economics, which had did this neoliberalism, which has done this. And so then the right get to answer for that as well. And so leftists think, well, Morrissey's, you know, he gets it. He's on our side. Where in actual fact, he wasn't. He was looking at it from a more right-wing perspective, which was that not so much the economic disparities, which should be the left's sort of hobby horse, what they're interested in. Instead, Morrissey is looking at just the authenticity, and just being in that place was miserable in and of itself. And this is where the right has to start moving in on this territory, because the left will, especially the social justice left, haven't got any idea about this subject, this area.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And you know, what we're saying earlier about how the right has almost delegitimized itself, the mainstream right, it's almost just a den of grifters, and it's a den of opportunists, and people don't really care about the integrity of their country or the future of the people within that country. But the right has done a very, very good job to make themselves look dreadful in every single way. The mainstream right, you know, the foreign policy of the neoconservatives, we know that they're not right-wingers, they're originally Trotskyites, but nevertheless, it delegitimizes patriotism as a legitimate energy or movement or sentiment, and also the neoliberal economics. It just makes it's not a question of inequality. It's a question of it sort of hollowing out everything that's worth preserving in the favor of consumerism. And I don't know if you've read anything written by Ted Kaczynski, but too rapid social change is also dreadful for what the premise of my book is about, which is time preferences. You can't have low time preferences. You can't have a future-oriented society if technology changes too fast a pace, if truth changes at too fast a pace. And you could probably branch out and include language such as, you know how progressive left have a monopoly on language, so certain words are politically correct one day and then they're politically incorrect the next. And then all these other things such as deindustrialization, sort of low interest rates, the possibility of future economic crises, all of these are interrelated into what we are seeing today, which is just consumerism, present-mindedness, and this lack of authenticity in people's lives, which ultimately just makes them miserable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as somebody asked in the just a couple of super chats, is right, first, there's Nick X for £2. Any chance of getting Striker on? Last time was great. Last time I was on Borzoi Boskovic's channel with Striker. We have to be careful because we don't want to get shut down. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'll have a chat with him again. No problem. Somebody called Fascist Cat for £2. Thank you very much. Morgoth, why pick high conservatism over fascism? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I am, actually. I'm not sure that I am. I think if I was an Italian or a German and I was saying the same things, it wouldn't be seen as being high conservatism. It would be seen as either a sort of reactionary traditionalism if I was Italian, or German idealism if I was German. It's just when English people begin to think like this, the English way of looking at that would lead people to think it was high conservatism. I wouldn't want to get bogged down in that debate because it's just authentic. But if you are, I mean, certainly the way I think is a lot more informed by German idealism than it is on of conservatism, I think. What do you think of that, Orwell?
I'm just going to reuse the argument I made earlier that any political scheme you'd like to see in place isn't going to look like any historical ones. You're going to need to find something that's authentic and which is playing to your strengths. I just try to think of strategies for the right in the future. And I don't think that protesting things is going to help much because it isn't sort of within right wing sort of behavior. Go ahead.
It's similar to there's the chavs on the motorbikes. It's similar to that Yang Gang thing, which I don't know what's happened with that over in America. I don't really pay attention to American politics at all. But when the sort of the dissident right became interested in the idea of universal credit, it was an interesting one because it made people think, well, is it because they're so, you know, that sort of individual, what people think of as being right wing, especially in America, is just sort of classic liberalism and libertarianism. And when people then say, well, why can't we have socially conservative values with universal basic income and that kind of thing, then people, because then it's kind of pour sand in the gears. Essentially, what you're talking about is a third positionism. And then you think, well, why isn't that right wing? What does it mean? What do we mean? And what we're talking about, I don't know what he was referring to, but just in the case of what we were talking about with Morrissey, that finding that authenticity and a genuine sense of being in a little English seaside town and making it thrive again, making a place worth living. And by thrive, we don't mean filling it full of McDonald's and Starbucks and whatnot. It is like a place where people actually want to live and are happy. And the mistake which has been made, and even the left will make it as well, is where, well, if a place is a bit dilapidated and people aren't very happy, just throw more money at it and get some fast food restaurants in there. And it's not that at all. It's something else. It's like what I got into on the pub, the English pub, where there is this ideal of what an English pub is, and we just need to have that brought more and more into everyday life.
Yeah, that's completely right, especially with the abandoned British sea towns as well. I mean, there's so many examples up and down the country. You know, you've got places like Scarborough, Rhyl, Colwyn Bay, perhaps, Blackpool. There's a lot of places up and down the British coast which is just completely lost all their industry, all their tourism in the summer because of the availability of cheap package holidays, and a lot of expats moving out when they hit 60 to places like Benidorm and Alicante. It's cheap and easy, and it's available. But how would you go about returning these people to these places? And that would take quite, you know, quote unquote authoritarian measures in order to do so, because it's so easy just to travel. Which is why you can have these huge mega corporations just set up shop in somewhere random. I live somewhere in the UK. I spent most of my 20s somewhere in the UK, which is very, very small, population of 3,000. It was a sea town, sea village, and it had its own subway there. And the subway was full every Sunday morning after everyone was hungover from the pub the night before. And it also had lots of these sort of late 19th century, early 20th century hotels, which were just derelict, abandoned. Nobody even bothered to buy them and repurpose them, just left there. Shattered windows, some of them were burnt out. It's just so sad to see. But how do you go about bringing that back and making it authentic, making people want to do it? The fact of the matter is they have to want to be in that situation, and for it not to be forced, can't be contrived. People need to have that energy behind it, and that love and that willingness to preserve something for after they've gone, which is, you know, just to bring my book back into it, but this is something that needs to happen if people want to break out this consumerist cycle, is to have something greater than themselves worth striving towards.
Yep. So, right, what's the book called again?
It's called A Matter of Time. It's how time preferences make or break civilization. And, you know, that's just basically just, if I could distill it into one sentence, is, well, you need to have something greater than yourself, greater than your momentary whims, in order to have a civilization. Otherwise, you're screwed. You're absolutely screwed. You're just going to have this atomized, alienated hellscape full of just consumer brands and these mixed people who have no collection, no shared heritage, no shared language, no shared culture, nothing, trying to coexist in the same place, living in matchbox apartments in some grey city.
And that's, I think, is a good place to end. And I've got one more super chat. John E. J. $4.99. Look up Mark Steele on 5G, Morgoth. He's in your area, Gateshead, taking on the local council. He has many videos on YouTube. I'll have to find out what 5G is first. I'm totally baffled by all this. All right, I will. That'll be my go-to channel when I get into this stuff. Right, so thanks a lot then.
Thank you for having me.
All right, thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks a lot for the super chats, and I'll catch you later.